The Neil Prendeville Show. Weekdays from 9 a.m. 104 to 106. Red FM.
Yes, it's the Neil Prendeville Show. It's column in for Neil this week. You can give us a call. Our phone lines are open, 1850 104 106. You can text us on 0868 104 106. And our email address, as usual, is Neil at redfm.ie. We spoke to, Neil spoke to Margaret O'Leary on a number of occasions over the years. I think the first was in the back end of 2012 when she called the programme looking for help in tracing somebody who was responsible for killing her husband, Pod, on a hit and run in July 2012. She joins me by phone on line one. Good morning to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Colm.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. I am not too bad. I'm just glad it's over at this stage.
Because I remember you called the program. It was the back end of 2012 when you were looking for help in tracing the person responsible for killing your husband, Pod.
Well, at that stage, we were hoping that somebody would come forward, and you know, I made an appeal, and of course, the Jeep as well hadn't been found, and you know, it was just an appeal for somebody to own up to the carnage that was left first of July.
Yeah, and you had a good idea, I think, at the time that the person involved was from the Cork or Kerry area, so it was a good chance he or indeed she or somebody connected with them would hear your appeal.
Well, that we were hoping somebody would come forward at all times, but it didn't happen. It didn't materialise.
That never happened. Just tell us, just if you can, what happened that day in July.
Well, I suppose on the morning of July, I got suspicious. My husband did not come home. The boys needed to go to football training, and I got suspicious. I just felt that there was something wrong, and he didn't come home, and I rose the alarm. And I rang the Gardaí, and they gave me every scenario that he was on his way home. But when I realised there's nothing would stop him from coming home, I knew there was something wrong, and we put out our own search party probably around 12 o'clock, and around 1 o'clock we hadn't realised we were looking for a body, but that's what happened. We found him, and thank God we found him, because he was well enough the road, and to be honest there was little debris, but enough debris to actually tie a particular vehicle. A particular person, even though we had never found the vehicle, and that was recognised in court. The vehicle was never recovered.
Yeah, Pod had been on a cycle in the morning time and had been struck by a car on the road and left to die there.
He was out at 5 o'clock, it being Sunday. He'd like to spend time with his children on Sunday, so he would have got up early so that he'd have the day along with them. And he was a family man, very loving father, so he went out on his bike at 5, and he was only maybe 3 to 4 minutes in his journey when he got struck down on his side of the road, because evidence did note that in court that it was on the left hand side of the road where he was going to Killarney Port, and the vehicle struck him on that side. I would imagine that wouldn't have been our findings in court, you know, with all the toing and froing, that's where the debris was. You know, but there was an awful lot of chat around it, and you know, and obviously he was struck at 5 o'clock, and we didn't find him till 1 o'clock. So, you know, they said maybe debris had moved, but I wouldn't think little pieces of glass would have hopped from one side of the road to the other. But you have to discuss all these things in court anyway, so yeah. It makes a day out of it, don't it? It was very difficult, I must say, the process itself, and I remember one particular day my daughter was to the right hand side of me, and Shane Fitzgerald brushed off her, hurt the back of her, you know, just brushed off her, obviously not intentional now at all, but it was that you were very close proximity to the person that was accused, and of course you're he's being accused, you weren't guilty. But, you know, I just felt there was definitely something in it, you know, the fact that he absconded immediately, and, you know, he did say not guilty once trial had started, you know, that was his plea, he wasn't guilty, and he said it with vigour, you know, he wasn't guilty, and, you know, you just didn't know till as they say, till the final day came when the jury brought in their verdict and said they found him guilty of dangerous driving. And of course, at that point, he did. You would see that he had changed from his. From his attitude through the trials, you know, I felt he thought he'd get away with it, you know. But
yeah.
My opinion, of course, you know. But
yeah, Shane Fitzgerald, the man who was driving the Jeep at the time, who killed Pod, he absconded straight away. Within 24 hours, he had left for the UK and subsequently left for Australia.
He did. He left for Australia and he came back for a holiday to England February last year, and word came through to the Gardaí and then he was extradited home.
So it's important to make the point that he didn't hand himself in. I mean, he came back to the UK and he was arrested by good police work there, really.
Well, when you plead not guilty, you didn't hand yourself in.
Yeah.
And as well as that, he went to the High Court for bail. And he received it, and he was out, and he was behind the wheel of a car for the last number of, you know, say, most of a year.
On bail?
Well, I was on bail. He was entitled to drive, and
he was
accused. You know, this is the system we have. You're accused, you're not guilty.
So
it's a process that you're kind of learning. Of course, we're all fairly, I'd imagine, intelligent, you know. It was just hard to take when you were in the midst of all this, like, you know that he was driving to and from court. I'd say the amount of court appearances might have been up to about 16-17 court appearances, and we had our man driving to and from it. You just felt a little bit uneasy about it, and you felt, you know, your husband was dead. And but at all times you were told this is the law, he's accused, his reputation is at stake, and, you know. But on the last day of court, of course, you know, he knew it was sentencing date, when, you know, his barrister said, you know, he was taking responsibility.
But that was only on the last day of court.
Well, it was, and it was a bitter pill to swallow. Even though, having said that, you know, and it's kind of a shame, really. We're all delighted with the fact that he did say, more or less, that he did do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's, you know, on the whole totality of it and what he pushes through. But you'd imagine what could they find that would be good about this particular individual on the last day. But, you know, they did poke out a few things.
Mm.
He was sorry. He felt remorse, and that was a great thing, that pleased the court. And I think his barrister said he was an immature 20-year-old, and in his opinion, he was 12 going on 20. Well, I didn't. I thought that was a bit unfair, really, because you're not going to jail a 12-year-old for that crime. You know, so that was a little bit exaggerated, in my opinion. You know, he was a 20-year-old driving that big Jeep. So that was his age, and that was it. Fine, we're all immature at 20, some of us. And more of us is mature, but you're not 12 years old.
No, you're still responsible. I mean,
you are, and you're getting a jail sentence as well. And, you know, but all this was accepted. There was nobody to stand up to in society to say, you know, to give him, you know, a letter saying that he was a good, upstanding citizen, or he did this, that, or the other. But you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't about my husband.
You felt that it wasn't about Pod. It was about Fitzgerald.
Well, the sentencing, really, it's about the criminal. The process is about the criminal, and you're there sat quietly in the court. No, I felt, you know, there was very courteous, you know, you know, it was very courteous, and, you know, once you behaved yourself, obviously, and you sat quietly, and you respected people doing their job, you know, but it does leave you a bit deflated with the whole system, because you know, it was all about Shane Fitzgerald, and there was, at the end of the day, when he put the country to the expense of a full trial, they were able to say, well, and in my opinion, it's not fair to say there's a man there in front of us who at that time was 20 going on 12. It's an insult to the family. He was a 20-year-old, he got insurance.
Yeah.
He had a big vehicle, he must have worked for it.
Yeah.
You know, so he can't have been 12, and he went to Australia and he got a job and he enjoyed himself and he had his few drinks out in Australia.
Mm.
I mean, that's pretty obvious from his Facebook page. You know, he was enjoying himself, so there was just the remorse was put in for the last day of court so the sentence would be lenient. Mm. And it was 5 years in jail and 10 years off the road. Now, I know a neighbour here in Guinness-Guilla was caught for drink and driving, and that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But my neighbour got 4 years off the road.
Yeah.
Now, she and Fitzgerald will be sat in jail for 5 years. So, if you think, if you make, do the math.
Yeah.
You know, that neighbour of mine that got 4 years off the road, he didn't kill anybody. You know, yeah. Shane will be off for five.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
you, like, he's in jail for five, he'll be, well, if he'll do the time in five, we don't know. So it's not to send out a message that you can't drag the country and a family to a hearing or a trial and think that it's going to be 10 years off the road and 5 years in jail.
I mean,
it's just too lenient.
Just to recap, I mean, as I say, you know, he was driving, the GP was over the limit.
A Toyota Land Cruiser.
Yeah, he was over the limit with alcohol. He struck Paul, he killed him. He left the scene of the crime. He left the country. He went to Australia. He only came back. He didn't hand himself in. He didn't plead guilty. He pleaded not guilty for the trial. He went through it. And after all that, he comes out with a 5-year sentence.
He comes out with a 5-year jail sentence and 10 years off the road when my neighbour got 4 years off the road for killing nobody.
Mm-hmm. And you think that's too lenient, obviously?
Well, my neighbour was only moving his car from one part of a yard, from the back of a pub to the front of the pub. I'll be honest with you, I think, obviously,
mm-hmm.
it's just too lenient. I mean, he killed a man. There's a family devastated. I have 4 children to rear. I'm on my own. Paul was a very good man. He organised everything here in the line of where we were going, sports, who take who. You know, he was on top of his game. I found that very hard to get used to when he died.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just who was going where on what evening. 4 children very into sports. It was just mind-blowing. And as well as that, he took them into the Glen Eagle every maybe 3 or 4 times a week, swimming, just practicing because they're good swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that was work. That's work done. I didn't have to do that. When he died, we had all Ireland's coming up, and I had to get back into the pool with my 2 boys and try and get him up and down the pool. All you could hear is, "Dad, didn't do that. Dad, don't do this. Dad, don't do that." And very frustrating it was, because I wasn't with Dad when he was training him, and I just felt deflated at times. You know, I came away, we hadn't our session done. We'd have no swimming session done. We'd be out of the water, and I'd be saying, "Look, my dad isn't here anymore. It's Mom now, and we'll have to do it different." And it's upsetting, because you just, everything changed, and you have to change with it. And you have to, you know, hopefully your children will come with you. Mm. But it took them a while, because Paul obviously was their trainer, and he was trying to, you know, just, I suppose, make adults out of them in the long run, because they are our children. My youngest was 7, and it's very traumatic for the children.
Yeah,
I mean, the pain and suffering is unreal, and as a family, you have nobody or nothing to turn to. There is no Shane Fitzgerald. When he was extradited, the law looked after him. He was well sorted. He had a great counsel.
Hmm.
I mean, he was looked after in court. He was, and too right. You know, I mean, if he was an innocent man, wouldn't you want it done for any citizen of Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
But for a family that loses their loved one and a father figure, that is, you know, the man of the house, the breadwinner, you've nothing to fall back on. You have no experience of death. Nobody comes to your house. Society. There's nothing there that the government have implemented for loss of this magnitude in a family. There's no organisation you can go to say, "Well, you know, I need this, that, or the other."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just you're on your own, mm-hmm. in your own community, and you rely on your neighbours, your family, to make dinner for you. You're helpless.
Mm-hmm.
But for Shane, he wasn't helpless. He was well articulated in court, and he took off out of the country, and he was well looked after.
Mm-hmm.
And here I am without my husband, and I start from scratch. I looked after the home and the finances. Pod looked after the children in sports, what they were doing every day. That was the way our family worked. Mm-hmm. But there was nobody to come in to me and give us support. You have to go out there looking for your therapy for your children.
And how are your children? Are you four? There's Ross.
They're still devastated.
There's Ross, Pod, Antoinette, and Shannon. How are they?
They're devastated. I had one of my children in last night, and he bawling, crying, and the fear of in his heart that has grown. It is just something that I just cannot comprehend. Only put my hands around him. We to come downstairs to see was there anyone in the home, to see was there somebody there. He just feels death is around the corner for him. He's just in a state, and that's it. And every child is different.
Yeah.
And as they say, you'll always have one that's going to take it worse than the others. But I couldn't say it, to be quite honest, because they're still all going through it.
Yeah.
You know, it is devastating. You come downstairs, there's nobody here. You hug your child, and then you go back up, and you try and get some sleep. And he doesn't. He cries, and he's looking for his father, and he's not there, and there's nothing I can do about it. You feel very helpless. And I know our trial is over, and we're trying to pick up with our lives, but it is difficult, to say the least. It is very difficult, and it's not fair. And all you're looking for fairness in the court, and it's not there for the Irish individual going in that has done nothing.
Because for the last 2.5 years, maybe, you know, you've been fighting this. You know, you've been trying to find the person responsible, firstly, and then to bring him to justice, and then go through the trial, and then the sentencing as well. And you're at the other end now. How do you feel? Do you have any satisfaction?
I do. I mean, he said he did it.
Yeah.
God, I do. And that's very important to me. Like, he did it. But the satisfaction of him saying that on the last day, it's kind of a bitter pill, if you like. But yes, there is satisfaction in it. And I couldn't deny that. You know, he did say he did it. Look, and it's good that there's somebody named for the crime. And, you know, at the end of the day, the trial is there. The process you have to go through. I found it very difficult, very, very difficult. It is a pity there isn't more than people out there with this kind of character, this caliber of person that couldn't stand up and tell the truth. God, any one of us can get out in the morning with our vehicle and mow somebody down by an accident. And I know he was drinking and driving. So obviously that was a worse scenario, but to deny it all the time until you knew that you were found guilty. And then only get 5 years and 10 years off the road. It's just too lenient. But look, I'm just a small fish in the pond. And
but I mean, you're right. I mean, accidents can happen, and you know. There but for the grace of God go all of us. But I mean, if you stay at the seat of the crime, if you admit to it, if you plead guilty, and if you make it as easy as possible on the family, there could be, that's a mitigating circumstance, and you say, well, you might get a more lenient sentence then, but he made it as difficult as possible for you.
Well, I think once you leave the scene of a crime, whether you come back 24 hours later or 48 hours, I think there should be a cut off jail time for that. Cut off, regardless, and that's my opinion. And people should sit down in the government and discuss, because in fairness, somebody that stays and tries and helps the victim, you know, that is an accident. But when you walk away from an injured person on the side of the road and you drive off into the sunset, and to be honest, that is just not... That's like somebody left to die on their own, more so than anything. It's not an injured person, because when a vehicle hits you, you have very little chance of survival. Very little chance, and especially if it's 5 o'clock in the morning, there's nobody around. Sure, everything is on the person that committed the crime. The only thing that tied him to the road and tied him to there, obviously he was caught on CCTV, drinking, having a good time, and getting into his vehicle and obviously driving. He drove out of his space in Killarney. He drove into the other side of the road. So it was fairly compelling. All right, you know, he was fairly drunk. It was terrible. I was just trying to hold my breath, not to scream out, just stop, please get out of your car, because I knew my husband was getting up at that stage, getting ready to get on his bike. And this is what you know in court, and you're hoping, you know what happens, like, but you can't help but think, please don't drive. But anyway, that's what happened. And this is evidence that was presented in court.
Mm-hmm.
And this man just fled the whole way from this country to another. Look, it's just, it's mind-blowing. And the law is not, it's very loose. It's not very tailored to the crime, because if you leave a person to die on the side of the road, 5 years in jail after what he did and all the lies he told, it's just not enough. And all you look is for fairness, and it's not really down to, you know, the mood of the day, or I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the judge looked at everything, and perhaps as sentences go, this might be acceptable in the world of the law, but I mean, I don't think anyone in the land of the living would think it's acceptable for all the lies told. It could happen to any family, it could happen to any father, son, brother, it could happen to anybody. And you know, after all the process you go through and all the hurt in your family is broken forever. Your family is never going to be the same. He'll be out in less than 5 years. You know, so he will have a life. I'm more proud to him. If he's sorry, it's great. But, you know, he said it, but I'd imagine that was playing with the law. It's best you say it if you want to get a lenient sentence rather than not say it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, do you accept that apology? Do you believe that? Or
I don't believe it, no. Because you couldn't believe it after all this. That I'd say he's sorry he's caught. And that's the truth of it. And I'd say he just played for his own. He's just, you know, that's the character he was. Like, you know, he was just, I don't know.
And if you could say something to him now, what would it be?
Well, I'd probably say, if you'll be finding Jesus in court, don't be coming knocking at my door, because I'm not interested, to be quite honest. You put us through hell. And that's simply it. That's just not normal what he did. Not normal. And I know it's very important to forgive somebody, but just at this point in time, I find that very, very difficult to do.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't think many people would blame you, Margaret. I really don't.
I can't help it. I can't help the way I feel. I can't help it. It's just very, I find it very, it's not so much, and I'm not mad at Shane Fitzgerald. I'm really, really mad at his attitude on what he did, on what he thought he could get away with.
It's his actions afterwards, after the facts, which is...
Well, it's his actions beforehand. I mean, you don't go out in the night and decide to get into a big, massive vehicle. I mean, we all know the potential of a car when we sit into one. They're really a potential killer in the road, like, and people do die every day from car accidents. And his vehicle was extra big, like a Toyota Land Cruiser, and he's quite young, having learned a small law that he can't have a vehicle of that caliber, of course, but he's quite young to have a vehicle like that. And of course, you know, going out and drinking with the idea of driving a big vehicle like that home, it's just, you know, it's like a missile coming from Killarney out towards Guinnesville. You know, it's just not good enough. Like, his attitude wasn't good enough. I don't know. I know he was 20 and out in the night having a drink, but, you know, there's plenty ads on telly. There's plenty, we know what drink does to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, it's appalling, that's what it is. And like, he did that at the age of 20, at the age of 23, he put us all through trials. So, I mean, the attitude is there in the chap, and that's, he's got an attitude, and that's it. You know, he's above the rest of us, and that's it. He thinks he can get away with a crime of that calibre? No, I suppose conscience probably, you know, it's missing there, like, you know, it has to be, like, because there's no way Pod would do anything like that anywhere. Or if a dog was on the road, he wouldn't be long stopping up. You know, it's just, you know, that's your nature.
Pod was
his nature.
Pádraig was a wonderful man. I mean, I know you spoke very well with Neil about him and his qualities, and he was a fine man. And you know, it breaks, I think, all our hearts to think that he was just left there, as you said, to die like a dog on the side of the road.
Well, it could have been anybody. It mm-hmm. could have been anybody. It was nothing personal. It wasn't like I knew the boy personally. I did not know him personally. I mean, it could have been anybody. It's just a ruthless young fella, and that's it. And, mm-hmm. you know, thank God he got caught in the good work of the Gardaí. It was outstanding because, you know, you had a lot of work to do. And I, picking up the pieces behind in the road and trying to knit them together to see what kind of vehicle it was. You know, that was all that all cost the people of Ireland a lot of money, and we're grateful for that, and we're grateful as well for the guilty verdict. I mean, the jury were spot on, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and eventually they squeezed him for I suppose, you know, that he was guilty, like, you well, know, because that was in his favour, that he told the truth. But sure, look.
Mm, eventually. No, I remember when I saw that this was coming to trial and somebody had been found and charged and it was going to trial, I was delighted for you. And I hadn't spoken to you since you were making the appeals on the programme. And I was delighted for you. And I was thinking, you'll get some satisfaction, you'll get some resolution. And then when I saw the sentence, I said, that's not enough. That's not good enough. And I'm sorry that, you know, it came out like that.
Well, I suppose we'll just have to, you know, get on with it. What can we do? Is there some kind of an appeal system that I can say, hold on here, I'm not happy? Do I have a say? I'd like to know. I'd like to find out. Do I have a say in it? Like, am I as important as Shane? I'd like to know that. Like, mm-hmm. if he's quite important now. Like, you know,
would you appeal if he could?
Well, if they were, oh, I would in the morning, absolutely. And the sentence, yeah, I would appeal the sentence, particularly off the road. I mean, I'd be satisfied that he wouldn't get any more jail time. But I think off the road, for me, would be probably more satisfactory, because at the end of the day, it was a vehicle he was driving.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't pose any maturity at the age of 23, from the age of 20, so he hadn't matured. And all of a sudden, on the last day, when the final bill was out, we had our guilty plea. But having said that, I just feel, yes, I would go down the road if it was that avenue was open to me, that it wasn't good enough.
Well, I know that people have been banned for life for a lot less, you know.
For a lot less.
Mm.
And like I say, my neighbour, 4 years off the road, not good enough at all, in fairness. I mean, he didn't knock down the inn. He knocked down a human being. You know, it was just not good enough. Like, I just don't think 10 years off the road, just, and especially when you're sat with 5 years inside in jail and your 10 years are still running, that doesn't, I mean, for law, it doesn't add up. What are you getting 10 years off the road if it starts from the time you just serve your time in jail? It doesn't make sense.
So that 10...
They're supposed to be educated.
That 10 years, Margaret, is starting from when he goes into jail.
It started on the last day of jail, or the last day of court, like.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first day he's going to be off the road, so he's going to be carried whatever jail he's taken off to, and he's going to be off the road also. So, I mean, you're not going to drive for in jail. So
yeah.
We're all very educated in the court system. I don't see how they made an old blunder like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or what's that about? I mean, would it not start after he come out of jail? Because then you can drive.
Yeah, well, that would be the obvious thing. I mean, really,
it's
yeah,
obvious,
absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
But all their education,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't, you know, and this is going on for how long? I mean, these kind of sentences are, I mean, we're not the first hit and run case. It's just, I don't know, it just don't bear thinking of, like, it just, you know, for as they call themselves, I suppose, well-educated people, you'd imagine they made a bit of a blunder on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Margaret, listen, thanks for taking my call this morning. You're very good. And listen, all the best for the family and you and you know, putting everything back together and making a life. I mean,
well, we're still in the process of that now, Cullum, to be honest. We're still not there, and perhaps we'll never be there, but we won't give up trying.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to try. I mean, you know, do you think the children will be able to move on, remember the good times with their dad?
Well, they do. We talk about him every day. Pod really always comes into our conversation, and his seat is idle at the table, and his aftershave is still there, and his boots and his runners and his clothes are still about. Mm-hmm. And these are all reminders of the man that was. And I'm hoping my children will grow up and they won't be bitter. You know, mm-hmm. you know, they won't be bitter, that they'll be the people they were supposed to be, even if their father was alive, that they'll become what they are entitled to become, honest human beings that will look after one another and meet people on the street or wherever, and if they see they can help somebody, a stranger, that they'll do.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't be put off by this situation.
Okay.
They will look after people in society, people around them, their family and their friends, and I'm up very hard for that to come to light when they will get older, that you'll get more out of helping the next one than what Shane did. There's no future in lies, and if you tell one lie, you have to tell a lot of lies to cover up the first lie you told. That was my teaching when I was young.
Yeah.
But don't tell the first lie. Whether you're sat in your school chair to your teacher, tell the truth and live by the truth. Because
okay.
that's my future and that's my existence and that's how I have lived. And that's my message to everyone out there. Look after each other.
Okay. Thanks, Margaret. I know that we're getting lots of messages here. The people of Cork are thinking of you and the family at this difficult time.
And thank you very much.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Colm. All right. God bless. Goodbye.
Thank you,
bye
Margaret.
Bye.
Thank you. All
bye
the best. Bye-bye.
The Neil Prendeville Show. Weekdays from 9 a.m. 104 to 106. Red FM.